be listening to the Black Ruler podcast with myself, Xavier Wade, and my very special friend, Mike Wells, is here today to discuss masculinity, to discuss the matters, to discuss all whatever we come up with. So like I said, Mike, don't be scared. This is a safe space. Can you tell us who you are?
Oh, damn. Yes. So my name is Mike Wells. Wow. Who I am.
We're starting with the hard questions from the beginning.
Okay, I'm a Black man happening. I am healing in motion. I am creativity exploding. I am a soft heart, a joyful spirit. I am a father, son, brother, lover, unk. I'm a cat lover. I'm a cat my damn self. I am a product of America and its Ness. Mm-hmm. Ness and mess. I am a wounded person going through a healing process and trying to make sense of the world like everybody else.
Facts. I just did therapy, so I'm all in my like wounded, like what's next, you know? What's my next healing journey? What's my next goal? So I'm here for all of that. So I met you in the process of the class that I was doing, A Lifetime in Quarantine. And when I found you, I was like, it's a Black man doing somatics, breathing, healing, like, and he's not hyper masculine. So what gem did I just find? Like, that's how I felt. I was like, this is a gem. What am I going to do with this gem? And then you also did some a presentation for A Lifetime in Quarantine. And also like everyone loved you. And it just kind of made me really become aware of, especially me as like a Black non-binary woman, like how much I am missing or in search of, or maybe not aware of, like wanting to be around positive masculinity. And I was like, oh shit. So I don't even know where to start with you because you're literally like, I can ask so many things. But I guess the first question is, what is masculinity to you?
Well, first I want to stop off at that thing where you were talking about not knowing that you were looking for like kind of a positive masculinity to be around. And my mind went directly to when you find like extreme quiet, you realize how much your mind is fighting white noise. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh shit, I didn't know the world was that noisy until I found the quiet. And yep. So then flipping that over and even for myself thinking about that in the work that I do, finding men that do the same, you know, do similar work or, you know, in that similar context of not overly aggressive, not, you know, wildly passive, but just kind of like sitting in that beautiful human space, not knowing that I'm thirsty and hungry and, and wanting that nourishment until I get around it. And it's like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So masculinity. The thing that really pops up about that word is as much as so many other words that I've been passing through in my own journey, my own healing journey, is that the word masculinity, what people are referring to when saying it, it's like shorthand. It's shorthand for a collection of behaviors and actions and choices and things. And so When I go through stuff like that, I kind of try to break it down to its lowest common denominators. And when I've heard masculinity and whenever I feel it into myself, the words aggressive, outward, I guess solid, matter. There's all these things that are, I guess, the simplest and short and most shortcut things. Those things get assigned to masculinity, like power. And aggression and solid things, not ethereal, not sensitive, not inward. So there's all these things ascribed to masculinity. And I guess it would make sense coming from, you know, coming from a world where the sense that is most relied upon is the eye, is the sight. And it's like, okay, so the masculinity is, I take a snapshot of that. I can expect these behaviors and these choices and these actions to come out of that being because of what I see. That's what kind of comes up in me when I hear masculinity.
For sure. And then like the thing that like, I mean, out of all of these that you're saying, like, so specifically like that whole visual component of what defines masculinity is coming from that visual space. I see a person who looks like this. This means that they embody this. And that is my assumption of who they are and their masculine self. But I also think about specifically with you being a Black man, like that visual component, like for me, it like excited me to see a Black man doing the work, existing, being happy, being joyful. And you know, you have like that like energetic, like childlike thing that I wish that I could embody because I'm just like real serious all the time. But like, but it like excited me, right? With my labels and my identities to see that. But I also know that in, especially when we're talking about America, that same visual can be something that's threatening for someone else, right? So
right.
I guess just like wondering how you deal with that, like somewhat duality or somewhat like double way of, you know, of existing. I don't even know how to explain it.
Right, yeah. The thing that really comes up, as you were talking, my mind was doing some things where it was like masculinity is like a Venn diagram where it's like the assumption of masculinity and the assumption of femininity, those two things. And then there's that overlap into humanity, right? There's that, you know, that humanness. You feeling comforted and other people feeling threatened. The way that I've navigated it, the way that I've dealt with it, the way that I was taught to, was to navigate the consequence. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, I know if people are looking at me, they see this and they expect these particular behaviors to come out of it. And they know that they're going to punish it in this way, in these ways, or they're going to reward in these ways. And my reflex response after, you know, with decades of training and everything like that has been not what do I want to do? How do I feel? But jumping to what's going to happen if I do this thing or that thing. And I make I've been making my choices from there and navigating the punishment reward system rather than navigating my own heart, my own mind, my own spirit. The challenging thing, I walk around as a duality, really, when it comes down to it. I know that automatically and reflexively, I contort myself to not be seen a lot in public space because I don't want to get either the hyper positive or the hyper negative responses when it comes to it. So I hide my presence. I kind of, you know, make myself small. I dissipate my energy a lot. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of me is just really being curious about what is there to be had. And can I show up? If I show up, what's that going to do for the area? And what's that going to do for me? If it feels good for me and I say, okay, if it feels good for me and I'm not going to die, okay, I'll show up. And if I, you know, say like in a learning space, go into a learning space and it's predominantly, like you were talking about, predominantly women or femmes, and me, maybe a couple other dudes that are in there. And my for a long time, my initial response was, I'm just going to blend into the wall and see where it is that I quote unquote, am allowed to have space, where I'm like, okay, I can occupy this without taking it away from anybody else. But then after some work that I did with Andrea Renee Johnson, with Jen McCabe, and the communities that the two of them had put together, I really have been falling into, especially with this healing journey, really falling into, I can show up as a human being and trust myself to navigate whatever consequences rather than trying to choose based on consequences. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me is where me walking around with the body that I have, the face that I have, as tall as I am, the skin tone that I have, the ability to put my voice, make my voice huge as hell, the fact that I'm pretty. No. It gives me a lot of space to be able to, I guess, make mistakes with how I show up and who I am as a man, and not, and I don't expect myself to show up with the man package that everybody else expects me to, but I am sensitively aware of how I'm perceived, how I'm looked at, how I'm talked to, how I'm navigated when I do show up, just as the being as I am with my package.
Yeah, I think like one of the things, I mean, how are we going to go about this? Because I already knew we were going to get into the shits. But like with you, for sure, like that part that you said about having to like contort and like make yourself smaller. And I guess like knowing we do that. And I know that you're such like an embodied person, even the way that you like when you talk, when you move your hands, everything is like very, you're just an embodied person, right? Just naturally. And I'm just wondering, like, how do you handle those moments where you have to kind of like pull in and not move as much and not be like, one of the things that we talked about once during one of my courses was living in a body and wanting to use that body to help you get through moments. But sometimes those moments, as a Black woman, if I'm like in a workspace and someone makes me angry, and even if it is like I'm the one in the right, I would never start yelling and moving and threat, you know, like literally my body, I would not do that. Where like I've seen white people do that all the time and they're fine.
Right.
Literally the way that I contort and hold my body in this like restricted way for my safety, because I'm like, everyone else is not going to feel safe when I just start to move freely and actually express what I'm feeling through my body. So me having that experience, but specifically as a Black man having that experience, like, how do you maneuver that? How does that make you feel? When do you actually get to like release that restriction that like has to be there sometimes literally for life or death?
Mm-hmm. It's the two things that hit me with that is it's a challenge. It's a huge challenge. It's like competing programs, right? We have the, oh, I'm in this room that I can see that has a whole constellation of different, you know, punishments and rewards waiting for me based on how people think and what they're seeing and how we've been bombarded with a whole bunch of ways of being and ways to respond to different things. There's a couple of different ways that I move with it. A lot of the healing and learning spaces, I'm good with kind of being in an observant place, being in that kind of more silent, observant, witnessing and contributing when it feels right to me, rather than just kind of being huge and taking up the whole space. There's a care in it for me where it's like, I know what it means for my energy to surge, to be huge, and to have other people react to it. In learning and healing and communal spaces, I'm good. It's an act of care for myself and for everybody else to just be in a held space. When it comes to those other spots, it really does depend on like the most foundational level is, am I going to be destroyed? Mm-hmm. And in what way? Am I going to be killed? Am I going to be taken away, you know, to jail? Am I going to be admonished? Am I going to lose this job? Am I going to lose relationships because of this particular space? And those have been harder and harder for me to physically deal with. Just like you said, I can feel the restriction happening in my body. Like my whole body is starting to seize up, or I can feel the discomfort. And I need to move around. Like you were saying, I'm in the body, so I'll stand up and start pacing or something like that. And even that will look like, oh.
Exactly. It's a threat. Why are you pacing around?
Uh-huh. Right. And it's that is frustrating. It's one of those things that gets more and more frustrating. And it's like, I know for a fact. I just have to say one word that's louder than the other one, and all the eyes are going to turn. All the things are going to happen. And now not only am I dealing with the surge that's happening within me, but I'm also dealing with the surge that's put upon me because of me having me expressing them, me moving through them. So challenging to deal with and so challenging to change. Before we came on, I was talking about my healing journey and relaxing away from so many different programs. Mm-hmm. And it's I still get caught up in those because it's like over time, like gardening. I have to keep watering and keep the sun on and keep to try to change it into something different, have something else grow. Because that groove, like a record, that groove of don't express your feelings, because if you express your feelings, this identity is going to do this to you. This identity is going to think that of you. This identity is going to put you in this box. And then you, for yourself, are saying to yourself, it's okay for you to silence yourself.
Yep.
And I don't want to do that shit no more.
I know, it's so hard. It's like, you know, like just through the work that I've done as well as like my lived experience, I'm just like, especially when we talk about like the like culture of like wellness and somatics and all that, it's like, you know, I want everyone to be as well as they can be, of course. But there's definitely like, there's like these unspoken sometimes privileges of like who can move, who can take care of themselves in the moment, who can, you know what I mean? It's like, no, I don't have, even though I may have the skill set to know how to like calm myself in a moment, right? Like I may know that if I move this certain way or do this thing or whatever, that it can help me in this moment of frustration or challenges or whatever. But it's like, but when I layer my identities of being Black and being this and being queer and whatever, I may not be able to do that until later. And that's bullshit. It's crazy around like, literally there's people who have the ability to just, if I am angry, to really express that anger, where other people don't have that.
Right. Right. And funnily enough, the ones that are quote unquote allowed to express anger, I question the anger. Mm-hmm. I question if it's actually anger or, cause for so long, I thought anger was a secondary emotion because so many people that I saw expressing anger were just covering up something. Mm-hmm. They were just covering up sadness or covering up pain in some way or another. And so when I finally was able to tap into and really own the anger that I have, that's not a cover up. It's like, oh, when the real anger comes, there's a lot of folks that respond to it. Like, yeah, that right there, when it's like a real anger, what people call righteous anger, but the anger that's a true, I need to protect and defend something that's closer to my livelihood and my life and my family than my ego or my, you know, my possessions or anything like that, that don't come close to the value that my humanity has.
I'm like thinking about, like, as you're talking, I'm thinking about the one identity that you carry as a father and raising your son. And so recently, last week, I was hosting this event that I was doing with Nurturely, and the president, he's the president and executive director of the NAACP chapter in Eugene, Oregon. His name is Eric Richardson. And so he was talking about masculinity, Blackness, vitality, childbirth, like all these other things, right? And so one of the things that he mentioned was that the idea of masculinity that we tend to lean towards is this like version that's really based on white supremacy. And I was kind of like, okay, I'm following you. Where are we going? You know, like,
right.
Where are we going? And he was saying that like masculinity, kind of like you said in the beginning, is with like this hardness, this solidness, this aggression, this like, you know, all those quote unquote masculine traits. And so when it comes to being Black and being a father, those are like two opposing things, because as a father, you want to be protective, yes, but there's also that ability to be sensitive and to be nurturing and to be, you know, and it's kind of opposite from the traditional idea of what masculinity should be. And he also just spoke about like how as a Black man specifically, how that can be very just like, what am I doing? Like what the fuck is happening kind of thing. And I just never thought about it like that. Like I just never thought about like the pressure we put on like performing masculinity and then saying, oh, and you're a dad, so no, be soft or no, you know what I mean? Like from this blubber of things that I'm saying. What are your feelings, your thoughts, your experiences?
The place my mind goes to is my son. He's 8 now. He turned 8 back in November of 2020. And the lead up to me and my partner at the time wanting to have a child, to him being born, until we ended up splitting about a year and a half into his life. Right at that point was this point where I was kind of tearing myself away from that performative masculinity and wanting to lean into. I wanted to be a dad for so so long. I'm like, I'm going to be Mr. Mom. I'm going to be stay at home. I'm going to be with the kid. We're going to be feeding and all these other things. And even though I was working, there was still so much of that that I was doing because my partner had a kind of really complicated pregnancy, 50 hours of, you know, of labor and then C-section and 6 mm-hmm. weeks of recovery or two months of recovery. And so there was so much of the time that was me and him. And there was a whole lot of this way that I always feel myself to be when I'm not doing the performative, which is this compassionate, this holding, this playful, this wanting him to discover this world that he's been, you know, that he plopped out into, and me be right there to support him in that, not to helicopter or to make things that much easier, but him to just play with that edge of discovery without harming himself. The most challenging part of that, and like what you're talking about, the soft side of fatherhood in that masculine, you know, spectrum, my partner had a whole different way of mm-hmm. being, and she was more not wanting him to struggle at all. So like whether he was building blocks or trying to put something together, and if he got just a little bit, as soon as he got frustrated, she wanted me to save. And I was like, I just want him to try to figure it out just a little bit. He'll get mm-hmm. to the place where it's like, there's frustration, and then there's, I'm not learning anything anymore because I'm super soft and everything, and I'm going to start throwing stuff. And I like him playing in that. I'm a facilitator, and so it's one of those things that I naturally did with myself when I learned and how I taught groups and how I teach groups and people and how I wanted to do my son. But we clashed in that. I wanted to hover, like, as a safety hover, and she wanted to hold and kind of and guide along. And that one was a really challenging thing for me, not to be able to lean into the place where I could tune into where he was at. And I hear mm-hmm. the different kinds of frustrated verbalizations and all those things. And then I go out into the world and then it's like, oh, mask comes on. And mm-hmm. A perfect storm of that was when her brother came to live with us for a couple of months. And I didn't realize why I was so exhausted, but it was because it was a man in the house. And here I was, like, in my own home where I would normally take the mask off, but it was automatically on because he's just yep. there. Not because of who he is or how he was, because he was more kind of like me, more of that.
It was that programming.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And it was mm-hmm. so exhausting. And then when he left, it was just a beautiful learning in that, like, wow, this is so much more automatic. It's not like I could just consciously say, oh, I'm going to just go ahead and put that down. It was just there for some reason. So that struggle in being a man and being a dad has been one that I think I've been struggling with for my life. It's like being my quirky, creative, happy self, or this thing that that dudes and the women that I wanted to be with wanted me to be, for me to be accepted by them. Like, I tried it. I fucked around. I found out I didn't like it.
Then what did you do?
I mean, my son's mom separating gave me space to more kind of accept, okay, this is how I am. I'm going to do my best to be more of how I wanted to be with him. But the breakup between the two of us was deeply wounding. It was like, it's one of those generational scars that, like, that lasts for hundreds of years if we don't, like, really get up on that. Me and him, her and him, the three of us really get to addressing and healing that. So that the wound was her wanting to really separate me from his life. Like, her mm-hmm. not wanting me to be in his life anymore because of her own traumas and things. And the fight in that, the struggle in that, the wounding, the deepening of the wounding that happened in that for me, brought more of that performative masculinity thing in and pushed so much more of my dadness out because I had shortened time frames. There was many times where I was separated from him for months because of stuff that she was doing, and then coming back. And then there's that like you're talking, like I was talking about before, the automatic stuff, mm-hmm. being so automatically wounded and scared about what it's like to be ripped away from him, that not wanting to get too close. And that's where the sensitivity and the softness and everything mm-hmm. else comes in. And so if I'm scared to get close, then the space between me being close and intimate with him and where I was at in that fear, that's where that masculinity would fill in. That it's been a really long time to get to the place where I'm at now, where it's like, okay, I can be scared of a lot of things. I can be worried and anxious about a lot of things. And I've navigated so many trials, tribulations, harms, and other things. I can trust myself to be able to handle whatever comes up.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. let me go ahead and switch back. Let me open myself back up, get a little bit more sensitive, go into that wounding, mm-hmm. and then just hold myself and hold him in that. Because both of us have that, like, oh, it's almost time for us to go away. So we have to separate ourselves before we get ripped apart. But now just a lot more conscious intention and nope, we're going to be right here. Yes, it's hard. Yes, it's challenging. Yes, it's uncomfortable. We're going to stay right here because next time we're going to get even a little bit closer than that and a little bit closer than that, a little bit closer than that.
See, this is why I had to have you here, because I knew I'm just listening like, yes, amen. Yes. Talk about all, because I think like, a lot of times, like when I see just like on social media or whatever it is, like people constantly talk about like the mother wound, like you know, things with your mom and generational stuff and all that. But I'm like, what about like the father wound and like the masculinity that's like, you know, performative, and that's also like for survival, that's like passed down through generations of men, and like how that affects their present life and then affects the life of their sons. And like, just all of that is coming to my mind. And I'm thinking of also like with your son, because what you're saying to me or like how I'm experiencing it is that like you have this awareness of that performative masculinity versus like what your actual version of masculinity may be, right? So you created your own, this is what Mike does. Like, this is what this is for me. But also, like, how do you, like, I guess, pass that skill and knowledge to your child?
Mm-hmm. Oof. The best way, the best way is to use the way that he absorbs me, which is just through my actions, my choices, my energy around him. And the more that I'm able to be, you know, to pull up another an old school word, authentic, to be more real, to be closer to the person that I am, and for him to be able to feel that and have that be okay and be comfortable in it, him watch me navigate the world and even do some of the work that I do, he's able to absorb, oh, there's another reality, there's another way of being. Because even thinking about me and his mom co-parenting separately, he's with her a majority of the time and he's only with me a little bit, so he gets to see one world with her so much more than he gets to see with me. But when he's with me, I get the presence. This is another way to be too.
Mm-hmm.
This is a whole nother way to be. And depending on what it is that I bring, he's going to notice. If I'm ignoring a pain that's happening inside of me, that's going to be in him, no whether we're talking about it or not. So it's up to me to really be doing my work, to really be centered, grounded, and whole in and of myself. And if I show up like that, he gets to feel that. And then when he's interacting with it, it gets in that much more. When we're playing, it gets deeper. It gets even deeper than that. And so it's really up to me in that. The other way for me to do it is to really pay attention to the words that he's saying, the things that he's doing. And if there is some element of something that's maybe against him or that won't work, that might not work for him, it's just to name it and bring it up. I see that you're frustrated trying to do this thing, and you're getting more frustrated. So just go ahead and stop right now. Mm-hmm. Hands off, take a couple breaths, and then we can come back to it. And so I'm like, oh, it's funny because I'm thinking of a specific memory that's reminding me so much more about when he was like one. And yeah. I'm letting him struggle, and I see him struggle, and it's like, okay, you're getting to the place where you're not going to be able to do it. So just stop, just stop. And then I'll say a couple of words into it, and then let him go back to it, and then it gets in. So
even that is like kind of going against like this idea of what masculinity is, because I feel like masculinity is like keep going until you can do it, and then you can like walk around with your chest poking out, even though you're probably like so annoyed and wasted all your time and could just ask for help.
Like, right.
But now because you've done it, like it's like, you know, proud chest and why?
Right.
So it's like
there's only that one way of success.
Yeah, exactly. So like even like with you saying that just making me think of like even with him, you're like, and those like, you know, little ways kind of like creating an avenue for him to create what is masculinity for him.
Exactly. Exactly. The holding the space, the creating the context, and the there's different ways that people define other people. And how does that work for you? But how do you define yourself? Or not even define yourself, but what is you? How are you happening? What if that is, you know, things that other people have said? There's especially when he was going to school back a couple of years ago. Right, pre-COVID times, yes. There was so much of that, boys do this, girls do that. And I'm like, why? Pop-Pop does this. What does that mean that I'm not? What does that mean that I can do it too? Mm-hmm. And just leave it like that. I try not to define things outright. Ask a question and then offer like, this is where I'm at when it comes to it. And so at least he can navigate it in that way.
Amazing. So beautiful. Like, see, I see why everyone's all in love with you all the time. It's so easy. It is so easy. So I'm going to switch it up a little bit. One of the things that I am wondering is with the work that you do with like, and I mean like personal and professional, I imagine, I mean, I'm not a man, so I don't know this, but from what I can see, when we're talking about like anything to do with wellness, anything to do with just like self-improvement, it seems to be mostly like a femme-centered space. And even if it's not centered specifically around women and femmes, that's just who the majority shows up, right? And like, I think that's just like a problem with the masculinity of like, I don't know if healing is not masculine or whatever, I don't know, but nonetheless, I imagine that like you're around a lot of women probably a lot of the time, but does that also begin to feel isolating because you are like one of few, or like, you know, like, is it disappointing? Is it, you know, like, cause I just imagine it, even though, you know, women and femmes are great, it's also like, hey, I would like someone who maybe has my lived experience in this way.
I think that the echoes from really earlier on in our conversation where I was talking about the silence and the noise, talking about not knowing what it is that you really want. I haven't felt lonely because I just like, I love to play. I love to learn. I love to connect. And whoever is in the room that's willing to do that, I get fed from, I get nourishment from. And like you said, there is something that happens when folks that are socialized the same way come into the same room. So when I'm in a room of men that are doing that similar work or same work, healing work, somatic work, there is a little bit extra because it's almost as if we're both or me and any other man in the room are just trying to find a way out of the prison that is our masculinity. The prison that is this man that's been placed on us. And it's like, this is how I escape. How do you escape? And we can use that together to help other men get out of this thing. So there's that. There's also that a lot of the things that I remember growing up, competition, the roughhousing, and then, it's a particular brand of irreverence too, that comes with, you know, when you have limited identities, those the irreverence is a way that self-care, that is that affirming way of going like, no, this is stupid, let's turn this shit upside down. And so there is that I miss and that I get excited. It's the same thing. It's like walking into predominantly white spaces and you see another black person, like, yes, I know I'm gonna have a good time now. And there's that, And it's just a particular, it's a brand. It's not better. It's a different brand of that I do. I can't necessarily say I miss, but I'm definitely grateful when it does, when it shows up, when they show up, when we show up.
So what, I feel like in these spaces, like one of the things that I'm doing, right, like in the doula world is I've been able to, like, through my doula organization, create a space where everyone is welcome. And I literally mean everyone. And even like in doula work, you know, it's this high like femininity thing, because, you know, people think about birth and all that, and they're like, woman, right? Like, bullshit. It's everyone, woman, cis man, trans, whoever. Like, if you could do the work, you could do the work. It doesn't, like, none of that shit matters. But in my organization, we have one particular male. His name is Teddy. And so he's like, you know, a cis man, black man, and he's doing the work and it's working out really well. And we have, I think, a couple more men coming into the space, cis men coming into the space in our next cohort. And so, like, I remember talking to Teddy and him saying, like, part of his delay into getting into dual work was, like, he just didn't know if he would be welcome. And so that really, like, bothered me, because I'm like, you should be welcome because you're a great person, right? Like, and I'm thinking that because that's my idea, right? Like, that's who I am as a person. And I'm saying all to say, like, how do we create spaces that are more open and more accepting and more, I don't know, like, welcoming to masculine people? Like, because I feel like within wellness, within healing, within health, like, everything is very, not all the time, but it can, you know, people, women have been, them show up because it speaks to them a certain way. And I'm like, there's just as many masculine people in this world, so how come they aren't here?
Like, right. Ooh. The place my mind immediately went to was the socialization and the wounding. And there's how much those two things merge with this culture's, American culture's, North American, US culture's, permanence, obsession with permanence. If I feel this way, I'm gonna feel this way forever. It's like we've taken our teenage selves and, like, made it a lifestyle. And so I make a mistake, I say a wrong thing, I do a wrong thing, I make a choice that the consequences affect so many people. And now we've gone back to, okay, the wounding and my socialization has flared up. I let it get past me, or I let it go, or I chose to do it in an active, conscious way. And now that's all that I am. Mm-hmm. All I am is the mistake that I've done, and the repair that I did or did not do. And then on the other side of that, being someone that has been harmed by a masculine person, it's like, oh, see, that's why we can't have them in here. So it doesn't matter if this person, you know, I even kind of got a little bit of that. I was processing a little bit of that after my session of A Life in Quarantine with your group, because at the end, there were so many folks that were saying, you know, I was worried at the beginning, you know, it's this man on the screen. I'm like, oh, shit, what the fuck is going on? And then after, it's like, oh, my God, I'm so glad I stayed, or, you know, you redeemed and all these other things. And there is so much that if one sentence could have just turned the whole thing left. And it's valid. It's like there's those wounds just kind of repeat and they get deep. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, yep, all these things that I believed were true. And even if, you know, presented with somebody who's not going to be that way, it's that anxiety, that automatic flinch, that halfway flinch when you're already going into an interaction with folks. I think there's a couple of things that I feel like would help. One is a softening that really only comes with trust, and the trust that comes with time. It's, you know, time and time again, this person has shown up and been this way. Okay, every human is kind of like that. We all have our scars, and scars are hard. They're hard. Mm-hmm. They're not like as elastic as the rest of our skin is. And these scars can be really hard to massage and to make into softer things. The pains, nobody knows. I don't know what words are going to be harmful to you. I don't know what actions are going to be. I might say a word to you that would be just fine and make you smile, and I say that same word to somebody else and they're ready to kill me. And so there's that permanence piece that's like, you are as only as good as the last bad act that you did.
Mm-hmm.
And you are only defined by your potential for harm rather than everything else that makes you, including that. And there's so much that I think that my work kind of goes into, which is like expanding the awareness of the experience of a human being or of anything, really.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just experiencing you with my eyes and my ears and my mouth and my nose. I'm experiencing you with my heart. I'm experiencing you with my skin. And I'm experiencing you with the part of me that connects to you, the way that we connect to all living things. There's a part of me that's like, that has a physical interaction with you that's totally different than anything that I could consciously think of, because I can't access that. But the more that I'm able to expand, the more I can do that. Loosening our grip on permanence will help.
I think that I'm like, as you're talking, I'm thinking about like, you know, like, so obviously I'm not a man, so I can't like identify with that. But I'm thinking about like my different identities, like, and one being Black, right? So in some spaces, you know, mostly white spaces, people have this, like you said, the idea of permanence around whether they actually had a lived experience with a Black person that went negative, or just like these ideas from, you know, family stuff was built into their like their thinking. And it's the idea of like, if someone is Black, then they might be harmful to me. And so automatically there's like this closed offness that is already like just present, no matter who I am, how I am, what other parts of me are evident, how great, like it doesn't fucking matter. And so I'm thinking about that in the way of like, with being a man or being someone who's masculine centered, like, yeah, like there is, even for me, of course, like I see a man and I'm like, what is this going to be? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You know, oh, like, damn. Is this going to be cool? Is this going to be annoying? Are you going to try to hit on me when I talk
mm-hmm.
cool? Like, are you going to be, like, are you going to be violent? Are you going to be harmful? Are you going to be, right? And like, I often like think about that. You know, I think about like, why am I thinking those things? And so some of it is just fucking programming
mm-hmm.
for sure. Some of it is like real life experience. Some of it sometimes to me is more logical in the sense that like, I'm 5'3". I'm not the biggest yes. person, right? So it's like mm-hmm. physically I'm thinking about these things because you could probably take me out if you wanted to. Right? Like it's like all these different things. But one thing that I do still try to be mindful of is like, you have to stay open, right? Like not have to, I choose to stay open, right? And I choose to stay open based off of, yes, these like, maybe these things are feeling threatening to me. But is it actual? Is it perceived? As well as what is this person showing me? Like if I took away all of that, right? Mm-hmm. If I took away mm-hmm. all my preconceived feelings, notions, whatever, and really was like, what is this person showing me right here? It doesn't mean I have to all of a sudden 100% trust them.
Right.
Right. But it's what you're talking about in that, like, just a little bit of trust, maybe next time around, a little bit more trust. But I also just want to say, like, I just naming it that it also has to be frustrating to like be a man and just step into a space and know that people are like side eyeing you. Like, that people are
you know what's wild about that? It's more frustrating to walk in as a Black person in a white space and have that than it is a man. and that's interesting thing because like right now it just hit me as I was saying it. It's like, well, okay, one identity is a marginalized one and one is a privileged one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that where it's like me walking into a predominantly women and femme space, I'm like, yeah, let's try that the fuck out of me. It's like, I'm liable to do any kind of stupid old bullshit that I learned somewhere yeah. along the way rather than just be myself. Or me being mm-hmm. myself might be this fucking stupid ass thing yeah. that might trigger you and everything. And so it's interesting. It's almost as if, no, it's not even almost as if, it feels more true that I have more space to be myself as, to be more close to myself as a privileged person walking into a room, as a privileged man walking into a room mm-hmm. with them, than I do as a Black person. Because like you were talking about, it's like that mm-hmm. film is like, it's less of a curtain and more of like a steel curtain. It's, yes. it's like kind of down, and it's like, well, no, it doesn't matter what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reasonable. It's like all the words, all the buzzwords, and everything like that, and you still can't talk to me like a human being. Like,
yeah, that, I think also like exactly. Listen, that's a whole nother. But for sure, I think also like recognizing like when I walk into a space with a certain identity that can be in a space can be privilege, right? Like the identity can be identity of privilege. It is easier, I'm more open to building the trust, and I understand why I have to build the trust, right? Mm-hmm. I understand why I have to like take the time to like not take up space and to, you know, whatever it is, and give people the space and time to trust me through my actions, through my way of existing, through whatever I'm like presenting that day, versus like being Black in a white space is like you're coming in not privileged, right? Like you're coming in, everything that you're saying is so true. Like as you come in and you're just like, I'm already coming in here having to deal with some shit because I maybe am one of few people of color in this space. And now on top of that, you're giving me the steel fucking curtain. Like my bitch ass wanted to be here anyway. You know what I mean?
Like, listen,
it's not my choice. I probably wouldn't want to be here either, but this is what we got to do. Like I understand. Right. I am often in spaces where, you know, I'm one of few.
Where you have to prove your humanity. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because on both sides, you have to prove your humanity. But on the privilege side, I mean, when speaking from a marginalized identity place, I know what it's like to be marginalized. So I'm going to give not necessarily the benefit of the doubt, but I'm already in a place of honoring humanity. And if mm-hmm. you can approach that place where the humanity is, then I'm going to more openly and graciously embrace you. From mm-hmm. a privileged place, to have somebody marginalized prove their humanity, they have to do so many different things that also include the privileges definitions of what humanity is, rather than what humanity actually is, which is a lot of marginalized folks know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
If you're connected to your humanity in that marginalized place, or you could become, you know, what the privilege, you know, wants you to be as a marginalized person.
Exactly.
Which is the human.
Ooh, yeah. You saying some shit. So the thing that I want to talk about is like, can you give us just more information about your work? I know we were laughing about the whole question around like, what is your main goal? But like, and you know, what you're putting out into the world and why you're doing that.
Yeah. My work, I've been on this really challenging 2-year gauntlet of trying to figure that out. And what I've been coming to is I do a little bit of everything. In the facilitation, healing, somatics, like you were talking about, kind of communal care relationship world. The image that comes to mind is an octopus. Like I have this, you know, this huge bulbous, like kind of happening of experience. And then I have these 6 tendrils of things that I do. Or 6. Wow.
I think
I just
8.
Chopped off a couple of octopuses.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess I'm at 6 now, and I have 2 more that I don't know about yet. but my work, as I was speaking to earlier, is really about experiencing the depth of life, interaction, community, relationship, and self. I'm a facilitator. I'm a consultant. I call myself a catalyst, a conductor, and a cultivator. And that's all about orienting ourselves to where we are, conducting a process on what it is that we're going to be up to, what we want to do, and how we're going to do it. And then the cultivation is that practice of just kind of being there. It's like that continuous mm-hmm. practice of do it again and choose it again and choose it again, so it can become more, so I can of myself be more my default be more me than someone else or a consequence or something like that. Mm-hmm. I facilitate groups. I do one-on-one healing and energetic work. I create and facilitate games. And everything is really about awareness and creating a world to experience and tilting your head just a little bit so things aren't the same. So you're just as present as you need to be to go, oh, I didn't even know that was there. Like, yeah, and it's been there the whole time. Yeah. Some of the work that I'm up to right now, I've been doing a lot of play with music, realizing that so many things are vibrations and music and everything. And I've been telling a lot of more stories and putting a lot more of the concepts that I have kind of roiling within me in music form, you know, clipping verses, clipping different samples, and really kind of putting together in a visual that's an experience in and of itself, and go, okay, how does this land on you? What does this mean for you? Mm-hmm. And then most recently, I've been connecting with a partner that we're going to be starting to do some fun things together, looking at the world in our upside down, inside out, sideways, backwards ways, and everything. And so it's kind of the way that I love to do. I love to play.
I was going to say that. Can you talk a little bit more? This is my last question for you. Is can you talk a little bit more about what is play and like why is it important?
I can start with that second one first. Play for me is I'll say that play is a portal to the present. Play is a portal to the present and to almost like the most open that we can be. Next to fear, play, I've experienced myself being the most open when I'm in play. Like when I'm fearful, there's definitely an openness to like what's going on, where's everything yeah. at, all mm-hmm. that stuff. So I know where the exit, who's the threat, mm-hmm. like, you know, all those things. But play is a similar kind of openness, but just flipped upside down. There's so much openness that happens in play. It's a whole different universe. What's going on here? Where are all the pieces? Who's doing what? What's the goal? And all of those things are strictly in the present moment. There's no past. There's no future. Play is a connective force. It's a learning force. It can be really subtle, or wildly dynamic. And it's just something that from when I first came out the womb, I was drawn to it. I live play. Play lives me and I live play. Mm-hmm. I love it so much. Playing around with words, playing around with the things that we're given, it opens up possibility. Play is possibility.
I need more of that in my life. I need definitely more of that in my life. I try to be more intentional now around like, you know, being so ordered and serious and just like liking, because, you know, I like things in their place. I like things to be like, I like structure, but also taking more intentional time to be like, have no structure. Like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And like also getting away from like the whole Black, like strong Black woman messaging that comes up, which like, you know, bleeds into me being so like in control of everything and whatever, but I need more of that. And this is why I follow you. So can you tell people how to reach you? How do they get to learn more about you?
Yeah. So I'm most active in my professional self on Instagram at Mike Wells, MIIKWELLS. And I also have a website that, I mean, is finally up and already needs to be reimagined.
Websites are a thing. Myself, yeah, I get it.
I'm saying. Mm-hmm. but that's MikeWells.com, MIIKWells.com. And if anybody is on Facebook, if you look up Mike Drop, MIIKJROP, that's where my irreverent side lives. I put all of my, I show all my ads.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. ass is shown.
I know that. When you were like, and you were like saying the third, I'm like, what is the third thing? Because I don't know about it. Facebook. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna get on that.
Yeah.
I want to see you show all your ass and see what that's all about. So.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I got hair. I got pimples. And, but the asshole's clean. Yeah. He's wet now.
Listen, it is what it is. It is what it is. But I want to thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing so much of yourself. Thank you for always leaving me with like redefining masculinity. And also like always leaving me with like, yes, joyous Black man vibe that I never know I needed. I never knew I needed. And I'm just like, thanks. I can absorb all of that. And it just helps me to feel balanced, you know, like, and like more yeah. like excited about the world. I don't know why. Just every time I'm in your energy, I'm just like, yes, this is what I need. And you know, I was all confuzzled before we like linked up today. I'm like, hold on, I'm late, I'm trying to get my shit together. And now I'm like in a good place. So thank you.
I'm glad. Thank you. I mean, and I'm so glad that that you reached out and you shared me when you first saw me, but back in like, I think it was May mm-hmm. of 2020. And so connecting with you has been beautiful, and being in your orbit has been awesome. So thank you so very much for
the lot there in that orbit. I'm glad you're able to keep up, because I can't. I can't. I'm like, what? Why are people liking this post? What am I? Where am I going? I'm trying to tell you, but for sure. So thank you.